Bibles turn to Matthew chapter 18, and I'll be reading verses 1 through 9. Now, reverence to God. Please stand as his words read. Matthew 18, beginning of verse 1. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "So who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a child and had him stand among them. "Truly I tell you," he said, "unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child, this one is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one child like this in my name welcomes me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to fall away, it would be better for him if a heavy millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses will inevitably come. But woe to that person by whom the offenses come. If your hand or your foot causes you to fall away, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed or lame than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to fall away, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into hellfire." Thanks. We were looking at the last verses in chapter 17 on Sunday, and we looked at how Jesus had healed a demon, or cast out the demon, and healed the boy who the demon was inhabiting. And then he, in verse 22, said, "As they were gathering together in Galilee, Jesus told them, 'The Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised up.' And they were deeply distressed." Jesus is again telling them what his plan is. His plan is that he is going to Jerusalem to die. It's not going to be a surprise. He's not going to be surprised that he's handed over. He's not going to be surprised that he's betrayed, but this is part of God's plan, because there has to be a sacrifice for the sin debt of all mankind, and no man can do it on his own. God is the one that is able to provide the sacrifice to forgive us of our sin. And Jesus knew the situation that was going on, and he knew what was going to happen. He even gives an example of this when Peter is confronted by one of the tax collectors from the temple, and the tax collector asks Peter, "Are you going to, or does your master pay the temple tax?" And Peter replied, "Yes." And then Peter comes into the house, and before Peter even says anything, Jesus shows his omnipotence, his knowledge of what happened outside of his hearing. And some of us know about things being outside of our hearing. Somebody can be right next to me sometimes that is outside of my hearing. But Jesus asked Peter, "What do you think, Peter?" And he used his name, Simon. "From whom do the earthly kings collect taxes and tariffs? From their sons or from strangers?" And Peter answered, "From strangers. But so we won't offend them, go to the sea, cast in a fish hook, and take the first fish that you catch. When you open its mouth, you'll find a coin. Take it and give it to them for me and for you." The situation that Jesus gave about who did the taxes come from reminds me about a event that's attributed to Davy Crockett. Davy Crockett was a member of Congress, and when he came back to visit some of the people that he represented, one of the people told him, "I'm not going to vote for you again." So why not? "Because you approved to give money that wasn't yours. You approved to give help to a firefighter in a situation, and you appropriated tax money to do that. You could have given your own money, but you chose to give the money of other people." And David Crockett has said, "If you reelect me, I'll promise I'll never do that again." And it's reported that David Crockett was on the floor of the House of Representatives, and another bill came up to give something to individuals. I think it was war veterans or something like that. But David Crockett stood on the floor and said, "We can give money out of our own pocket, but I've learned that it's not our responsibility from the Constitution to give money that doesn't belong to us. And if we each gave 1 month of our salary, we could fund this act that you want to do. But I'm not going to approve voting for using tax dollars." Well, a lot of people don't follow that philosophy. And there are a lot of people that like to give other people's money away, like to spend other people's money. Many of them are in our government at every level. But Jesus is saying the ones in charge, the king, doesn't get taxes from his own children. And Jesus also said, "Then the sons are free." And in John 8, 36, it tells us, "And if the Son has made us free, we are free indeed. If Jesus made us free, we are free." Romans 6, 22 says he freed us from the power of sin, and we are free because of what he did. But Jesus said, "Don't offend them. Go cast your fishing line into the lake, and the first fish you catch is going to have a 4-drachma coin. That's enough to pay the temple tax for 2 people." And Jesus told Peter, "Then you take that coin and pay your tax and my tax." Jesus knew the situation, and he provided a solution for it. Remember, Jesus has just told the disciple that he is going to Jerusalem to die. But it tells us in our passage today, "at that time." And "at that time," the literal Greek means "at the very hour." So right after he got through telling Peter to go pay the tax, go fishing, the other disciples come up to Jesus and ask, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Now, in the Gospel of Mark and the Gospel of Luke, it tells us they had been arguing which one of them was the greatest in God's kingdom. And I remember a very good boxer who always went around saying, "I am the greatest." Muhammad Ali, excellent fighter. I don't know if he had a humble bone in his fight. But one of his quotes even says, "I said I'm the greatest even before I knew I was." But he would use intimidation and always say he's going to be the one to win, and he won most of his fights. He was a great fighter. However, in 2017, he found out who the greatest was. Because when he died, he went before judgment, and he learned that he was not the greatest. Well, why were the disciples concerned about who is the greatest. Remember, Jesus has been saying, I'm going to die. And they're concerned about, you know, when you come and have your earthly kingdom, when you set up power, I want to be your vice president. I want to be your secretary of state, your secretary of this or that. They hadn't been listening to Jesus. Instead, they were just focusing on what they want. Have you ever told somebody something, and then a few minutes later, they ask the question that you just answered, and then again, they ask it a little bit later? Now, I'm not talking about children on a trip. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? I was almost done with high school before I realized my dad had been tricking us. At least once a month, we took a trip from our home in North Florida up to Montgomery, Alabama. 3-hour trip. Well, Dad told us the halfway point was a place called Highland Home. Highland Home is actually 2.5 hours away. It's only another 30 minutes in Montgomery. But he had us all believing that the halfway point was actually almost to our destination. And it worked, I guess, because we didn't keep asking, are we there yet? Because we knew we hadn't got to the halfway point. Well, sometimes we are like the disciples. We forget that Jesus has told us his plan, and we go, well, when are you going to do it my way? Where am I going to be? The disciples, like many of us, want to be viewed in high esteem by men. If you go to a convention of church leaders, they're always talking about bragging about who has the largest church, or which one of them is on the radio, or which one is podcasting or whatever. Instead of looking to the humble individual, they look to the one that wants to be exalted. And there are people in large churches that are preaching the church truth and are very humble. They're not mutually exclusive. But too often, many pastors are focusing on moving up to a bigger church. That's why the average tenure in a Baptist church is about 2 years. They're just there long enough so they can find a bigger church to go to. And they're trying to work a ladder, just like many people in the secular business field want to get advanced and advanced, to be recognized by people. Jesus, when the disciples asked him who is the greatest, said, had a child stand right in front of him. And he says, you must become like children. I remember last year when I was teaching the pre-K students, the attitude of a child is much different than the attitude of the high school students I taught. The pre-K students are there learning things for the first time. I still have the pre-K students that are now in kindergarten come up and give me a hug and greet me. I even went to Circle K and found out that one of my parents of my pre-K students was now working there. And she got her phone and called her daughter and said, here, he's here. And then my student from last year, talking about how she missed me as a teacher, then the parent complimented and commented on how much impact and how much the child had grown in that time. Well, what's the difference between a young child and an adult? The young child knows it can't take care of itself. The young child knows it doesn't have a lot to offer. High school students think they're there to be a gift to the teacher if they'll get off the phone. Well, the young child is dependent on others. There's nothing they can boast about. That's the attitude we need to have. And when the teacher explains something, it's like, wow, okay, this is the alphabet. And they repeat the alphabet and learn the alphabet. They learn the truth. I'm going, I think there should be a different alphabet. I don't like this. Let's change the order. Now, they will ask you, why isn't this order? That's okay. Like, why is the sky blue? Okay. Those are questions they want to really know the answer, not trying just to confound you. And Jesus says, truly I tell you, verse 3, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. That little phrase, enter the kingdom of heaven, tells us we're not there yet. It's like if you're going to go to an amusement park, you got to go through the entrance gate with your ticket. And to get into heaven, we have to have the ticket. And the only way we can have a ticket, because we can never afford it, is by God buying it for us. The wage of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life. He has bought our ticket to heaven by His blood covering our sin debt. And verse 4, therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child, this one is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Disciples were arguing which one of us, 12, is the greatest. They didn't even learn the lesson that Jesus tells them here, because in chapter 20, James and John had their mother ask Jesus if they could be in the greatest positions in heaven, or in God's kingdom. But that's a little bit later we're going to get there. Jesus then goes on, whoever welcomes one child like this in my name welcomes me. Are we looking to welcome the young, humble, attitude Christian? Or do we want to bring about the ones with a great attitude about themselves to be our speakers that we want to hear? Jesus says, welcome the one that's humble, that has that childlike faith. But then he warns, if anyone causes one of these children of mine to stumble, it is better that a millstone be hung around his neck and be thrown into the deepest part of the sea. And the millstone there, they had little little home-sized mills that you could hold in your hand and grind. And then they had a huge one that you needed an animal to turn. The Greek word here means it's the big one that you need an animal to turn. And if you look at what's happening in our education system, there was a study done, the higher someone's educating, the less they believe the Bible. because there are people in colleges that are telling their new students, don't believe what your church said, it's a lie. Don't believe what your parents said, I will show you a better way. Those college professors that are leading young Christians away from the truth, they're the ones that fall into this category. It is better to have a millstone come around their neck. But then he says, there's going to be offenses coming. We need to be prepared for it. And we need to take action. Now, he's not talking about curing the offense by cutting off your hand or pulling out your eye. Because he told us in Matthew 15, verses 18 and 19, it's from our heart that all evil comes. What he's telling us is we need to deal with the situation. And a little bit later in chapter 18, we're going to see, beginning of verse 15, it tells how to deal with those that are not living according to God's direction, those that are causing offense. And that's a sermon for a little bit later. You can read ahead. What do we need to see from this? Who is the greatest? That's the wrong question for a Christian to ask, because it doesn't matter which man is the greatest, because we are all sinners. What matters is God is the one that tells us to humble ourselves, to put others ahead of ourselves, to not exalt ourselves, but exalt Christ. I haven't heard it for a while, but the phrase used to be, we need to help the children have better self-esteem. Well, what we need is everyone needs to have more Christ esteem. We don't need to build ourselves up more. We need to lower ourselves, humble ourselves, and realize we have nothing to offer to God. And come to Him in childlike faith. Stand with me for a closing prayer. Dear God, I thank you that we can be here to worship you, to sing praises to you, to be challenged by your word. Let us not think of ourselves more highly than we should, but let us humble ourselves, because you tell us the one that exalts himself will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself, you will exalt. Let us wait for your action and not try to build ourselves up. Let us depend on you for all and not think we can do it ourselves. In Jesus' name.